September 17, 2010, the Norris Group returns with its award-winning event, I Survived Real Estate 2010. The Norris Group has assembled an incredible lineup of industry experts to discuss the state of REO from the inside, including regulatory intervention and aftermath, bulk buying myths and facts, and the opportunities emerging for eager real estate professionals. 100% of the proceeds support the Orange County affiliate of Susan G. Komen for The Cure. This event would not be possible without generous help from the following platinum partners: The Business Press, Foreclosure Radar, and Sean O'Toole, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and President Sean Watkins and Angel Bronskis, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Berry, Claudia Buys Houses, Fry Wiles, the creative agency responsible for iSurvive2010.com, MVT Productions, who always provide our audiovisual needs, and White House Catering, who will provide the three-course meal for this black tie event. Visit iSurvive2010.com for details.
Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today our special guest is Peter Wayman. Peter is the senior REO sales director for Fannie Mae. He took that position in January 2010. In his position, he oversees the design of sales strategies and how they are applied across the REO portfolio. His group oversees the retail sales process as well as auctions and investor sales. Peter's responsible for the affordable housing strategy, selling homes to organizations engaged in neighborhood stabilization. Peter came to Freddie Mac with 32 years of executive relocation experience, and in that position, he's won national awards and is in the Hall of Fame. Peter, welcome to our show.
Thanks very much, Bruce. Pleasure to be here.
You know, it's interesting. When I look at your resume and I look at the position that you currently have, I'm just curious what in your past work experience is helping you deal with this current position.
Well, Bruce, the major product that is offered by the relocation industry over the years has been the purchase of the transferee's home.
Okay.
So, you know, in that regard, we're always used to valuing and selling on a cost-plus basis, principally the homes of these transferees. So although we didn't have to foreclose and evict any transferees, on the other hand, we did have to call executives of companies and tell them the values of their homes. Both of those are scary prospects.
And also must have been national in scope.
Absolutely. Actually, it's global.
Okay.
The relocation industry operates globally and, even does home sale and disposition, in many countries around the globe.
That explains why you are the man for the job.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah.
There was an article that just came out, I think it's today, and talking about Freddie Mac's Homesteps Vice President, REO Management Key to Stabilizing Housing. And in that article, he's really talking about one of the keys is to get the REO inventory, which has started to grow, into the hands of owner-occupants. So I guess just from your desk, and you're seeing the inventory move or not move, does it look to you that there's sufficient demand from the owner-occupant to solve the backlog, let's say, that you might see coming?
Well, as you know, Bruce, our primary method for selling homes is to put it in the hands of some great real estate brokers who offer it up to the entire marketplace. And in that, we're also offering very special incentives and such to owner-occupants to attract them to buying our properties. So our focus is to make home possible, and to do that by positioning our homes fairly so that an owner-occupant can buy them. The way we do that is make sure it's conditioned for appropriate financing, have buyer's closing costs or home warranty programs that we can offer to owner-occupants who are buying properties. And, we are bias towards getting that owner-occupant into the home, if at all possible.
Is that because, let's say, the history shows that if an owner-occupant lives in the house, it's better for the city or the area?
Absolutely. We're focused on neighborhood stabilization.
Okay.
So you get an owner-occupant in there who has some of their own money invested in it and committed to it as their principal residence, they're going to connect more with the community, have more pride and in the community, and be able to, we think, help stabilize communities that have been impacted by high foreclosure rates.
Does it look like the demand from the homeowner will be sufficient to take down the inventory?
Well, in 2009, we ended the year with about 71% of our homes going to owner-occupants.
Okay.
We're just a hair or two under that for this year to date, we're still in a prime selling season here right now, with our special summer incentive, just finishing up, where we had, a special program for owner-occupants.
So that ratio of 70-30, is that an acceptable target?
Yes.
Okay.
We do recognize that some of our properties, are not suitable for owner-occupants in their as-is condition.
Okay.
So we look to do other things with those. And first of all, starting with, the Neighborhood Stabilization Program funds to put those homes that may require a substantial amount of renovation before they're ready for an owner-occupant, put those assets in the hands of a NSP grantee, because their mission with those funds, the $6 billion that the administration has allocated to that program, is to take the home, properly renovate it, maybe add green energy efficiency options to it, and then sell it to an affordable buyer with a sustainability factor. And to do that, they actually do that with an eye of leaving, maybe $25,000 or $30,000 in a property. Which is something that couldn't be done by private investors.
Sure.
It can only be done because of the administration's money through neighborhood stabilization.
So once again, that inventory is probably in a particularly troubled area. So this is really stabilizing the most necessary inventory and also upgrading it probably beyond where a private investor could do it.
It definitely wouldn't work for the private investor. And this is where the administration's efforts, I think, really pay some dividends, help to really reshape those neighborhoods. And in the end, it puts an owner-occupant back into the property, as opposed to if you sell it to an investor who's going to use it as a rental property.
Some of us do a pretty good job of rehabbing these houses, so they don't always turn out to be detrimental to the inventory or to the neighborhood. But I know that there's probably a wide scope of how people handle that inventory.
Absolutely, and we deal with a number of responsible developers and investors who are using broad-based programs and have some pretty interesting approaches to renovate these homes and put find a sustainable homeowner to put into it. So we do see that as a viable program as well.
The NSP funds, is that always going to either be from a city or a county rather than from an individual or a corporation?
Yes.
Okay.
Typically, the neighborhood stabilization, the biggest funds, of course, coming from the federal government, but state governments, land banks, and other programs, nonprofits, are also engaged in neighborhood stabilization, and we're open to working with all of the organizations that are committed to neighborhood stabilization and support that with giving them a good look at our assets and see what we can do to align with their efforts.
If you have NSP funds or you're a nonprofit, is there a list that you get to maybe take a look at that's not generally publicly yet available?
Well, Bruce, our primary method, a good example of primary method of doing this is with the NCST, which provides access to grantees with NSP funds. And the NCST works with a broad base of grantees, and it works with a large number of servicers. And it creates an interchange which shows all of the servicers' properties on a Google-type map so that these grantees can look to see if there are properties being offered in their designated census tracts where they're doing neighborhood stabilization.
Okay.
And then they have an opportunity to immediately ask the servicer for pricing on buying one of those homes. And all of that happens during the pre-list phase of our, moving the REO inventory. So that time that we're getting the valuation and the marketing strategy and any repair work prior to listing the property, that's when these NSP grantees have the first look opportunity through NCST to see if that property will meet their needs and to get pricing from us on it.
In talking with the cities, it seems like they've had a little trouble spending their allotment, that they maybe haven't been able to find enough properties. And I'm not sure why that is. Maybe there's just a difference between the reaction time of a private investor. But I would imagine that some effort is being made to make sure that they get a chance to spend their money. And I know that there's some type of time frame attachment to that as well.
Absolutely. In fact, there's some of the NSP1 funds, frankly, had to be committed as of today.
Okay.
August 31st. But, there's also NSP2 funds and soon to be NSP3 funds. Each grantee took a different approach on how they would assemble their programs, and some got out of the blocks faster than others, each with their own different approach. And we try to work with as many of them as possible and help them by showing them the inventory. Even after the first look, we'll remind them, here are the homes that we still have in inventory that are unsold. Maybe some of these fit your criteria as well, and continue to try to help them.
Now, you've joined Freddie Mac since January. What kind of changes have you seen in the marketplace in the last 8 months as far as, direction of we're going to foreclose on a lot of homes, or we're going to try to solve them in advance of that process?
Boy, there sure has been a lot of activity around the modification process and the foreclosure alternatives. And I think those are becoming stronger and more effective as the servicers and ourselves have been able to gear up, get the right kind of automation in place, get the right amount of trained staff, get the real estate community to understand the mechanisms that are available, get the counseling and coaching out to the debtors, and to help make those more effective. So we're seeing the numbers on the modifications and the foreclosure alternatives go up, but we're also seeing the banks pick up and address serious delinquencies. If you've been watching the numbers that we've been reporting, you'll see that in the tail end of the fourth quarter is when our serious delinquencies hit their peak at about 4.13% of all mortgages. And that's been coming down now for 4 or 5 months in a row. And so, the serious delinquency seems to have peaked and is coming down, but we're also seeing that the REO inventory has picked up as servicers have been processing more. So in January of 2009, for instance, we had 21,000 homes, REO homes. In January 2010, we had 45,000, so, you know, twice as much. And today, or at the end of or July 1st, you know, the June 30th number, we had 62,000. Now, that 62,000 represents inventory that's in redemption, eviction, pre-list, as well as listed, and those that are sold and going to closing. So it covers the entire range of the life cycle of a property. And generally speaking, you know, over 50% of an REO inventory is in redemption, eviction, and pre-list. With numbers rising, that number is generally, that number is actually closer to 55% today, with, you know, about half of the balance being split between sale pending and homes available for sale.
Has it been concluded that the losses are lessened if it's solved by modification?
Absolutely. I think the earlier you address the problem, the lower the costs are in the process. I think foreclosure has to be looked at an REO as the absolute last resort, and we'll be happy to see the numbers go back in the other direction.
Now, the modifications, I know at some point they had virtually about a 60% failure rate. Is that improving now that prices have stabilized?
You know, I don't have the exact numbers, but I do believe that as the modification process has gone to using a written verification process and careful coaching and a lot more attention to the modification process and a lot more expertise at it, they're getting much better, and as a result, I think the failure rate is gone down.
In September, you're going to be part of a pretty special panel at I Survive Real Estate, and there'll be in front of you about 400 eager investors trying to figure out how to perhaps get their share and maybe even participate in a bulk purchase. So can you explain to me at what point does Freddie Mac take a look at the investor and say, okay, we've got a small and what is the quantity of homes you consider a bulk deal, and when does it become appropriate for Freddie Mac to say, okay, this is what we're going to do with this inventory?
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. It's great to support a worthwhile charity event like that, and I applaud your record for doing that.
Thank you very much.
I get asked this question by investors a lot because I know that investors are bullish on real estate and would like to acquire it, and to and they see good economics in that. But we have a fiduciary responsibility as an organization in conservatorship and to protect taxpayer dollars. You know, our focus on looking at REO inventory is best execution. What can we do with this asset in its state right now, with everything we know about it, to get the highest yield to minimize the cost to the taxpayer?
Okay.
And, you know, what we found through our experience is that nothing delivers a better recovery rate than listing it with a great real estate broker, exposing it to the entire real estate market, having it priced right, conditioned right, and allowing that exposure to drive a retail sale, and to do that with an eye of selling and closing the property in 90 to 120 days. And, you know, Bruce, I got to tell you that, most of the time, that's exactly what happens. There are assets that don't sell in that time frame that we have to reevaluate, look at the situation, figure out what the next best execution will be. And we do utilize other venues such as ballroom auctions, online auctions, and finally, bulk sales to investors. We don't see bulk sales as to investors as being the highest potential recovery rate.
No, of course not.
But
do they exist?
Situations and kind of the rock pile assets, the sticks and stones that are left that maybe an investor has an appropriate execution strategy, and that would be a useful thing. You know, I would say that less than half of 1% of our activity goes through bulk investor sales.
Okay.
And at the same time, we're looking at how we can do that better. We just went through a major project to build a more robust bulk sale process with a data vault and kind of all the things that we would need to execute this if we wanted to use it as a stronger strategy. And we look to come back out into the market on that in the next month or so with a bit more activity in that area.
Okay. Well, maybe by September, maybe that'll be something we can talk about in front of the audience if it's matured enough to talk about at that time.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah, it's one of those tactics that you want that club in your bag, but you hope not to get stuck in the sand trap.
Now, imagine there's some states where there's just maybe different types of problems. Well, let's say a Florida condo situation. Is that one area where you'd be really happier to have a bulk deal because that might be the only solution?
I do think that there are categories of assets that lend itself to different investor type of situations. Actually, in Florida, we have an excellent opportunity to sell condos there because Freddie Mac has a waiver on the condo requirements of the guide for REO properties in Florida. I'm looking to get that expanded to the other states where we have high condo concentrations as well. But, Chinese drywall or properties that have manufactured housing without the title or low-value properties or uninsurable or no certificate of occupancy or environmental problems. There are a variety of assets that are not suitable for an owner-occupant. They're not interested. The NSP grantees aren't interested in them. They don't sell at auction. So, you do run out of sticks in the bag.
Okay. And it's a last resort. We get to take a look at it. That's okay. I know where we stand.
Bruce, I can tell you that I have a lot of investors who contact us who say they'd like to buy all my $200,000 properties in California and Arizona.
I'm one of them. And like you said, you don't necessarily need to do that.
And I said, you mean all those ones that I get multiple offers on the first 2 weeks that I have them on the market?
Yeah, exactly the ones. That's exactly the inventory we'd like.
The retail recovery on those for executing them through that method is going to be much higher. So we're always looking for the best execution with the idea of how do I get neighborhood stabilization first, how do I get the assets to the first choice or first look to the grantees, then how do I go out to the owner occupants and then work my way down the waterfall of alternatives for best execution as we go.
Peter, we've run out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, and we really look forward to seeing you on the panel in September.
Bruce, thanks very much.
Okay, thanks again.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate 2010. Adrenaline Athletic, Benton Investment Group, Community Reinvest Workshop, Del May Properties, Elite Auctions, Entrust California, Everlast Photography, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Keystone CPA, Landwood Title, Las Brisas Escrow, Leyva's Financial Services, Mike Cantu, North San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Personal Real Estate Investor Magazine, Realty 411 Magazine, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Summit Solutions, Tony Alvarez, the REOMentor.com, WealthPoint, and Weston South Coast Plaza. To find out more about I Survived Real Estate 2010, visit isurvived2010.com.